on day one. And wow! He's taken the cover off that. A splendid goal from Son Heung-min, which gets Spurs off to a flyer.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of A Bit Spursy. I'm recording on the road today. We are visiting my wife's family interstate. We're staying in a hotel right now. And I think that my surroundings kind of encapsulate the feeling about Spurs at the moment. The hotel's all right. Looks all right. Looks quite nice. But there's a pretty small window in here. The most recent game we had was about a week or so ago against Newcastle. You can see, no rush to record after that game. So let's just let things just settle down for, 7 to 10 days, and then we can jump back into it. We'll quickly talk about the Newcastle game because there are a few things I think worth covering in there. But overall, I think it sort of sums up where we are in the Ange dynasty. And I call it a dynasty because I still think that we're going to end up having an Ange dynasty happening here. I'm still very much on board the Ange train. I know this game seemed to be a lot more divisive than other results we've had recently. And I mean, we've had a few stumbles like the Fulham game and then I think against Wolves. But I feel like when we have these stumbles, they just seem like isolated incidents. We kind of move past them pretty quickly and we write them off as being like, well, that's just one game, back on it next week. And we hope to sort of play a little bit better. But Newcastle just absolutely tore us to shreds in this one. And yeah, I've got the stats in front of me here. So we had 73% possession to their 27. And to lose 4-0 to that is quite remarkable. They had more shots than we did. But yeah, it really seemed like Newcastle completely executed the perfect game plan against Spurs and Ange's system and how to bring us down. And I mean, like, their forward line in Gordon, Isaac, and Barnes was just perfectly set up to tear us apart. I still long-term have faith in Ange, and I think this is maybe where some fans are starting to shift off a little bit, where they're looking to see Ange make some changes now and maybe be a little bit more defensive, or in some ways maybe just have our fullbacks playing a little bit more defensively, or just being aware of, possible space in behind where you have three absolute speed merchants who can break into. But I still feel like there's just a few things that went wrong in this game. And I know by this stage, we've all listened to a whole bunch of breakdowns of this. So like I said, we're not going to sort of linger on this too long, but I mean, Mickey just had a really rough game, but I think that in terms of how he's played so far this season, like, he's been so remarkable and incredible, and he's been our get out of jail free card. And I think this just shows what happens where at the moment, if our get out of jail free card just gets burnt down, then there's no getting out of jail at all, and we get locked up in jail again and again and again. I don't really want to go in too hard on Mickey here. I think that overall in his development, like, we can't just start getting stuck in and say the system's failing or that, there's anything wrong with him. Even after having a game like this, it just was not a good day at the office for him. And someone like Isak's like a pretty good matchup for him. I don't want to get into this territory where we're just blaming the referees, but I did think, especially at the start of the game, the referee was letting a lot of things go. And to finish the game with Newcastle having no yellow cards and us having four with Maddison, Bissouma, Romero and Van de Ven, I thought that was pretty ridiculous. Especially Shah and Dan Byrne, like, they both could have had a couple of cards. There were even times when we were brought down in transition. I think Maddison was brought down by Byrne and that could have been his second yellow card, but he didn't even have the first one. And that was not given as anything. So it just seemed like Newcastle were playing a really physical game. If you're playing Dan Byrne as left back, you are automatically then playing a very physical game because he's an absolute monolith of a human. But it seems like, things just aren't getting called in the manner that we would like them to be. And again, I wonder if it is kind of a reaction from last season when now playing more, the league is playing more physically and they're letting more things go, and whether that's going to change next season or not. And then, it might course correct a little bit and come back down. But that is a bit of a worry if these things are going to keep on going like this. And it's happened multiple times this season where we do get fouled and referees are pretty hesitant to give out cards. So really, when Yates got the card after about, I think, 12 minutes for Forest the other week, that was one of the only times where we've seen an early yellow against this this fouling that we're coming up against. So I don't want to say that we would have won had Byrne or Shah gotten some early yellows, but it's just something now that it's becoming pretty annoying. It's just a frustrating thing when we don't go out and try and play a really physical brand of football. Yes, we like to press a lot. And yes, we do admittedly, we do foul. But at the same time, it's like we're not making as many consistent physical fouls as the other teams are making against us. For this game, I don't think it's really worth going through player by player. Everyone seemed kind of off in this. No one was really clicking. Again, the whole game plan that Newcastle executed was just really perfectly suited. I did think it was interesting that, you know, we had Johnston starting, especially going up against Byrne. I feel like the intention would have been to have Johnston get round the back of him and utilize his speed, whereas Dan Byrne isn't that quick. But in hindsight, I think this was really a game for Decky to start, and we needed some physicality because Werner, Son, and Johnston just got bullied around at the back there. So I think, again, this puts us in the scenario where it shouldn't really be an either-or situation where we have, is Johnston starting? Is Kulusevski starting? Once one gets in and has a good run of form or plays a good game, then suddenly they should be the only one to go with. I think this is really symptomatic of, we do need, whilst we do need profiles of players that Ange can rely on and are in a similar mould to kind of play his style of football week in, week out, still having some flexibility within that would be good. And yeah, I thought that we really, really could have done with Decky's aggression in this. And I think he would have just been able to hold the ball up a bit more against Byrne. Whereas I think Johnston just had a kind of torrid time against him. The thing that I do find funny about this, though, is that, you know, we play against a team like Newcastle, and what are we thinking that they're doing in the lead up to this game? Like, are we thinking that Eddie Howe is just sitting around, just twiddling his thumbs and not doing anything? In the Premier League, these people are at the height of their profession. They can't really get much higher. So they're going to come up with game plans for us. And there's pretty much no game plan in the world that is flawless. Unless you have just endless buckets of cash, and then you can, you know, get the perfect player in every single position to do that. But even still, teams still struggle. City this season, they're in third currently, and sure, they've got a game in hand and they could go top. But still, you know, for how much they've spent over the last decade, they should be in theory then winning every game, 3-0 and walking every single season. Admittedly, they do walk most seasons. But point being here is that teams are going to prepare to play against us and other teams. And I think that we just kind of need to accept that sometimes they are going to get their game plan right and they might get a result against us. Other times we are going to get our game plan right and we're going to get a result against them. I do think, though, that as we get more comfortable with Ange's system overall, the margin on that changes a little bit. So we do have a little bit more room for error. Whereas at the moment, as we're still learning how to play Ange ball and we still don't have the full squad to really play it effectively, the margin of error is quite thin. So, Van de Ven has a couple of hairy moments. Werner misses a couple of chances. Then suddenly a game that we could have possibly walked away with a 2-0, 2-1 result, something like that, ends up being a 4-0 loss for us. But yeah, I always find it interesting that we just have this expectation that we should be beating every single team we play against, and there's never going to be a team that can just get a game plan right against us. And like I said, it's what do you think Eddie Howe's doing all week? Are they at Newcastle and just sitting around and, oh, Eddie, do you think we should maybe work on some tactics? And, oh, no, I don't know. Let's put tactics to the side. Let's just go. I don't know why Eddie Howe's Scottish, but he is. Let's just put tactics to the side and watch Lion King all week. That's really good. It's well, anyway, maybe we should actually just work on the game. We've got Spurs coming up. There's a few holes we could... No, let's start it. Let's just watch Lion King on repeat. The boys really like that, you know. Gordon loves it. He tucks himself into bed every night and watches it. Like, let's just watch that and hope for the best. Let's know what happens. Like, they're spending all their time working out the flaws in our system. They have analysts, everything like that. So whilst we are in this developmental period, we are going to have teams that manage to get the game plan right because they also have the players in their squad to exploit our weaknesses. And I just think this is part of the growing process. I prefer Ange to stick with these tactics now rather than flip-flop around and start tweaking them at this stage. Like, I prefer for our players to really get Ange Ball just injected into their veins and just... They're just so, it just becomes so second nature to them that then we're able to, I think, maybe pare it back a little bit. But I think at this stage, while you're trying to get players to kind of buy into a way of playing, if you're constantly going into every game and making changes and saying, look, Poro, mate, and a doggy, yeah, both of you come in at the same time, yeah. Right, look, this game, I just want you to sit back a little bit more. Don't go for it. You know, they got some speedy boys. Newcastle, Gordon, Barnes, pretty quick. I want you to sit back a little bit more. All right, see you, boys. If we're starting to do that every game, suddenly then we're losing that chance to just really ingrain this ruthless attacking philosophy into the squad. And I'm sure that that's what Ange is going for at the moment. Like, he's not an idiot. And I think the way that he talks, and because, you know, he does just sound like this just Aussie dude and he speaks like a common man. And I see a long-term approach here. I could be completely wrong. If it turns around and Ange is like, nah, mate, no long-term approach. I just don't know what I'm bloody doing. Then I will put my hand up and say, yep, I was wrong on this one. But I just think that he's mentioned so many times that he's thinking long-term. And that's what I see here. That we're, until he has the squad in place that he really needs to play our brand of football, and until we've had long enough for the players to really get down to that, I think we're going to see games like this. So if this is still happening, say, towards the end of next season, then I would see some pretty big warning signs with the approach, and like something would need to change by that stage. But again, I think that we shouldn't expect to see drastic changes to this from now to the end of the season. Some games we might just be hoping for the best a little bit. And I know that sounds a little bit defeatist, but again, long term. Destiny Udogie is now injured. He's injured his left quad. I believe he's had surgery on that and is out till the end of the season. So... yes, our fullbacks that's still really the issue in the squad, where we don't have any even remotely similar backups. So, I mean, Davies is going to have to come in for a doggy there, unless Davies has gotten injured. I haven't realized that. And then I don't know what we do. Do we just put Van de Ven out there and bring Dragosin in? What happens there? I'd be interested to see what Andrew do in that scenario. But yes, no Destiny. And of course, it would have to happen before the North London Derby, which is the next game we have coming up. And I feel there's just an ominous sense in the air ahead of this one, because it's set up for us to be able to have a crack at Arsenal. We have had a pretty decent break of a couple of weeks since our last game, which was Newcastle. Whereas Arsenal have played 3 matches, and this is going by Australian dates, so but the 13th of April, and then Arsenal, we're playing them Sunday 28th. Arsenal have played Villa on the 15th, Bayern, which they lost to, which was just absolutely delightful, and Wolves, which they just played over the weekend too. Now, they lost to Bayern 1-0, and just to quickly touch on that, it was great to see, I think, Kane and Dyer, you know, get Bayern over the line there. I didn't watch the game, but apparently Dyer was man of the match, and there's that lovely clip of him afterwards where he was asked, you know, what does it feel like to knock out Arsenal? And he's just kind of shyly saying like, oh, it was nice. It was nice. Oh, nice. Oh yeah, it was really nice. Oh, so what could I say apart from nice? But it was just a really nice moment, I think, for him. And it was nice to see that he's still got a bit of coys in him. I mean, he was here for long enough. I don't really care what happens in the Champions League, but if Bayern go on to win it, I would be happy for Kane and for Dier. Especially for Dier. I've always liked Dier as a person, but he was not even making our squad. And then he's playing Champions League quarterfinals, going through to the semis, maybe winning the final. Like, that would be an incredible arc for him to just leave and basically be Harry Kane's mate for 6 months. I'm sure that's a reason why he was brought in. And then possibly end up winning a Champions League medal. It would be incredible. I wish him the best in that pursuit. But anyway, Arsenal have gone out of that. So in some ways, that's good. They might be a little bit more crushed. But in other ways, they've probably got more motivation to really get the job done with the league this season, especially how they choked last year. They're also playing Chelsea tomorrow morning, our time. So they've had a lot of games in this period. Whereas, yeah, we've had a nice big juicy rest. That doesn't mean I think we're going to go into this game feeling good, because I would have rather that we had a game in between that gave us a little bit of that confidence boosting back after a 4-0 loss. So I wonder in these scenarios if maybe just Ange every day, he just goes around and he just finds, like, you know, local teams, Sunday league teams, you know, League Two, whoever he can manage, just to come in and build the confidence of the boys back up again. So, you know, they rock into training on Wednesday. It's like, all right, boys, we've got Plymouth Argyle down here today. Let's just, you know, they're really up for it. Let's give them a good game. And then we managed to beat them like 7-0 or something. And maybe that's a legitimate approach that you could take to try and get players to forget about the Newcastle game. And even if it's like, well, boss, I'm totally down for this, but it just feels like we're kind of playing scrap here. And we still feel pretty bad about the Newcastle game. And it's like, don't worry about the boys. Look how many goals you scored today. That was bloody Timo. Timo had a bloody double hat trick. Timo, have you ever had a double hat trick before? Incredible, mate. Absolutely bloody incredible. Come back in Ange's office. Let's have a little cup of tea to celebrate. I don't know, but there could be some merit to that. Whatever is happening at the training ground, Ange will have to be doing a lot of work in terms of building up that confidence of these players, because we haven't been playing well. And then to have a bad result on top of that, it would be a challenging part of the season for us to get back from there. So, yeah, I'm not feeling good going into this North London derby. I think Arsenal will be, like I said, very, very motivated here. Sure, if City win their game in hand, they can overtake them. But Arsenal are well and truly in the title race. The Spurs fan in me says they're in pole position. I know they're first, but I would really, really love for us to get the result here and just do something. But I see this as a very, very challenging fixture. And I guess what I'm trying to say here is I wouldn't be surprised if we do get smashed up a little bit. I just hope if we lose this game that it's not by too much. We've got to remember too, Arsenal are, you know, what, 4-5 seasons into Arteta's project, and they're a fairly well-oiled machine overall at this stage. So even though this is a derby, anything can happen. Our players aren't in great form at the moment, and they've had a long break to lament the poor performance last time. After that, like, we do have some challenging games to finish off. Like, we go to Chelsea next a few days later, and then a few days after that, Liverpool. Then we still have Man City after Burnley. So, yeah, from now to the rest of the season, to play Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool in a row, that is tough. I really hope we win the Chelsea game. There's nothing more like that I just want to beat Poch. Like, Poch can't do the double over us in his first season back, especially how poorly Chelsea are playing right now. Liverpool, it kind of depends. If we lose to Liverpool or if we lose to City, I never really want to go into games advocating that we lose. But if that keeps them above Arsenal or stops Arsenal winning the title, then I don't know. Maybe it's time to give Lancashire a bit of a run up front. Maybe finally we'll see just a full team with, like, all right, Dorrington, mate, you're starting today. Donnelly, you're in. Get in there. Mookie Moore, yep, you jump on as well, buddy. Let's go. Let's get this thing happening. And, yeah, Andrew would be questioned after the game if we'd been tanking that on purpose. But I'd be down with that. I'd be down with that. Let's see how we go against Arsenal. Go from there. Hopefully we don't get ripped to shreds, and then we can take some sort of, I don't know, reignition of form back into the Chelsea game next week. So from this point until the end of the season, we are going to be absolutely inundated with transfer rumors. They're already popping up all over the place. And it's pretty much players in every single position. You'll get reporters such as Ali Gold saying, you know, like, he's heard that we're looking for a center forward, or we're looking for a defender, or this, that, or anything else. But you just see so many players starting to be linked with us now. And I think that will continue to happen even after we sign a couple, right through until the end of the window. Because we do have a large amount of players that we would be looking to ship off, you know, such as like Reguilón, Lo Celso, I think Højbjerg is going to want to go. We are going to have a lot of transfer rumors. Something that I did like was Modric. And I do not think there's any chance of Modric coming back, even though he was quoted as saying about returning to the Premier League, look, it'll be difficult at my age, but you never know. I still can't see it happening. I mean, he's won everything, so there's a tiny chance. And I would obviously take him for a couple of seasons just to wrap up his career. But I don't think that's going to happen. What he said, though, which was really, really lovely, was he just was lavishing praise on Redknapp and was just saying he's such a phenomenal man and everything like that. And he had like a lot of happy memories working with him. And what I really liked, too, is that he said, you know, we definitely played the most beautiful football in England, and especially after my initial struggles. And it just reminded me, like, that Redknapp team. And I don't mean to, at the first bump in Ange's tenure, we look back and just start, you know, reminiscing about, you know what, 15 years ago, that was a very good team. Let's go back to those days. But that Redknapp team is one of my favorite Spurs teams that I've ever been able to watch, you know, on TV regularly, and actually getting to go and watch a couple of games over in London at the time as well. It was such a lovely team to see playing. And of course, like Bale, Lennon, Crouch up front. It was just such a free-flowing brand of football that we played under Redknapp. And I think this is probably more symptomatic of the last few years where we haven't had that. And then we've had a little taste of that at the start of this season. It feels now, though, that we do have so much more pressure. And by all accounts, like, the season we've had has been really good in terms of like where we're looking, like finishing like fourth, fifth. I think in Ange's first season, that's great. But yeah, there is still that, you know, nostalgia of playing some nice, sexy football, kicking back in. So I would have Modric back if he wanted to. I'd pay him whatever he wants. Like, who cares? Good experience for the squad. And also, he would be very beneficial to have because he is one of the best midfielders of his generation. So I think you would take him back regardless of how old he is, 38, 37, 38, something like that. Let's get Modric back. Let's make this happen. If he's dangling the carrot there and starting to flirt with us, like, you know, you never know. It's a bit challenging, but I could come back. Then, you know, let's reach out. Let's see what we can do. Now, I've also seen that James Maddison has his invitational golf tournament at the end of the season. I think 28th of May that's listed. And there's been a few bits of promo about that and all these players. I did go onto his account and just see some of the photos where that was announced. And it's just so funny seeing how many Spurs fans have replied on there, being like, focus on football, bro. Oh, mate, how about you just do one thing, buddy? How about you just focus on your bloody football? Needless to say, like, this tournament is happening in the off season, and I don't think James Maddison is like sitting there on Photoshop putting these images together and like, oh, what font do I use for that one? Like, I've got to really make it bounce. It's not taking up that much of his time, I'm sure. He just gives a few calls to his mates after training one day, tease them up, and then his manager and agent just take care of everything else. But it's so funny, this idea that we still have of, if a player's not playing well, that the only explanation from that is that they need to focus on football more. I like to think of it, it's more of an art than a science. Sure, there are players who play a little bit more scientifically and predictively and everything like that, but I think that, you know, players are going to go through spells where they're not playing well, and there could be thousands of reasons, whether that is something to do with a recurring injury, whether it's a confidence-related issue. And I don't think the answer then to fix something like that is just to go like, do you know what your problem is? You need to be playing and focusing more on football. Maybe they need a little bit of time off, well, to not focus on football. This reminds me of in The Last Dance. I think when Phil Jackson is talking about Dennis Rodman, for the Bulls, when he just like disappeared for 2 weeks or something, went to Vegas. And I think, I can't remember the exact specifics around it, but it might've been like maybe Jordan was also just like, look, just let's just let him do his thing and then we'll get the Rodman we need back. He just needs to go and have this absolute splurge and then he'll be okay. I'm so fine with this. We never expect just people ourselves in normal life to just focus on our job and that's it. Like if you have your friend just post something on Instagram and it's a photo of them on a hike or having a coffee at a cafe, you're not going to comment there and be like, I focus on accounting, mate. Hey, what's going on, mate? You know, focus on your bloody bookkeeping, all right? What's all this about having any type of life? Like, we're following these players on social media and we hold them to such high regard. And we just think that, again, if they're not playing well, it's because they're not trying or they're not caring or anything like that. I know that was a big thing that Dele was accused of when he had dips in form. It was like, oh, no, look, he's got his fashion label. Oh, it's because he's not focused on football, anything like that. I always find it funny when this comes up. But, you know, I enjoy it. I enjoy seeing these players just having interest outside of football and expressing that. And, yeah, I don't think we should always just focus on football, bro. Just mentally with players, like, I would encourage them to not just be robots that only care about football. I think that if they care about other things, they're hopefully going to be able to enrich their lives and mentally and be able to do more on the pitch for us because they're having different outlets that they can then draw inspiration from. Now, the last thing that I did want to talk about this week was the Spurs-Newcastle game, which is coming at the end of the season, I think 3 days after our last game, which is absolutely wild. As much as I love the idea of Ange and Spurs coming to Melbourne and, you know, Ange coming back to his hometown, it's just wild to do it 3 days after the end of the season and then before the Euros as well. So we're going to have players here who are, they don't want to come, whereas at the start of the season, they might still not want to come because they can't be bothered. But they'll at least be like trying to impress for the new season and they're going to have it as part of like a training camp sort of thing. I'm fine with that, even if it is a longer trip. But end of the season, you got players who are going to do everything they can to not get injured before they go off to the Euros and international duty. And we're just going to have a pretty tepid game where players won't be playing more than 45 minutes. And I think that, you know, they always end up saying like, we'll be bringing everyone who's fit. Like, don't you worry about that, mate. Everyone who's fit. It's very easy for a player just to say, oh, you know what, boss? Oh, the quad, the hammy. Oh, hammy's feeling a little bit tight. I think I better just stay at the training ground this week and get some deep physio done on that. So I think this will be a bit of a scratch match. I know that's not a hot take. That is just how these games always are. But yeah, it was kind of weird. Like, I signed up for the pre-order for tickets. I was quite excited. And it was weird because you know how you have the capture codes? You have to like put in some combination of letters and numbers to like click on them in an image, or you have to click all the motorbikes in a picture in order to submit forms. This one was weird. It's like you had to solve a puzzle of Ange within 60 seconds. And I don't know if that was them just trying to make it a little bit more fun, but it was kind of frustrating because you had to like slide the little pieces of Ange around. It's like those puzzles that kids have that they just kind of handhold and you just slide the blocks around like a grid. And you had to do that just to get access to the pre-order. So I was pretty excited initially, but then I haven't bought a ticket and I don't know if I will go to the game. I'm probably more tempted to go to the open training session, which I think is like $10. But the game itself, it's at the MCG, huge stadium, like 100,000 seater stadium. But the prices are unbelievable. Like for the cheapest tickets, it's like $60 Australian. So I don't know what that is now, like £30 or something like that. But to get any half decent seats that you're not 3 kilometers away, it's you're paying a couple $100. Also the fact that we're playing against Newcastle and, you know, firstly, the style of football they play is not great. Also, do you kind of want to support Newcastle's quest for their advertising and their kind of sports washing that they're going through at the moment? And I know that can sound a bit high and mighty because like all clubs are doing something and have like, you know, some elements of shady pasts. But I don't know. I'm not that excited for this game anymore. And I kind of wish that it wasn't happening, especially if the season finishes in the manner that it looks like it might be heading, where we're probably queued up for a few losses from now until the end of May. I'd be interested to know if other Australian Spurs fans listening, if you are heading to the game, let me know. I'm just curious. I'm still not ruling it out, but yeah, it's definitely a bit of a sheen take off of it, just for a number of reasons. So I think we're going to leave things there for today. We'll be back next week after the North London Derby. We'll either be consoling each other, sinking our sorrows, or celebrating getting some result against Arsenal and going some way to stopping them get the title, which would just be fantastic. So thank you for listening. I've been Dan, and come on, you Spurs.
You've been listening to A Bit Spursy. Head to abitspursy.com for all the links, and you can email me at dan@abitspursy.com. Thank you.